Hello and welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. Today's show is an important one. Today, we're talking about the importance of emotional well-being of athletes. Mental health is not just a trend for the moment. It is an important life skill and life training. And I am so thrilled to have with us Dr. Herb Martin, a clinical psychologist, mental health expert, and a grown-ass man from Detroit. Dr. Herb Martin is the president of Peak Performance Consulting Group, and he's also the team clinician for the Los Angeles Chargers. He's also worked with the NFL as a whole, as well as a consultant with the NBA, NBAPA, and conducted countless rookie mental health trainings for both leagues. When it comes to mental health, Dr. Herb, as I affectionately call him, is truly the man. Thank you so much for joining us, Doc. How are you today?
I'm doing great and certainly a privilege to join you. And then that introduction is something else there.
Well, you are the man. You are the man, right?
I appreciate that.
Here at Raising a Pro, we like to talk about the journey of the athlete through the perspective, sometimes of the athlete, or many times through the perspective of a parent, mainly the mother. And there's so much happening in our world today, and I really want to kind of address it in the short time that we have. Let's get back to the beginning. How can parents utilize the importance of mental health in developing their young athletes as they start? Because many times we think of mental health, we think about, oh, when something goes wrong, then go and see a therapist. Or when something is really bad, then we can address it. But mental health many times is not infused in the training of athletes. So how can parents kind of get ahead of that?
You know, it's an interesting question. And I think it's an important question to start with, because I think, you know, as we were talking a little bit earlier about complicating things, I really believe that mental health is really about safety and creating safety, emotional, psychological, social, interpersonal. And I think as parents, we have to model that behavior. You know, I think many parents, and particularly African-American parents, are reluctant to seek mental health, for example. We know all the reasons why. But the bottom line is that the parents of our children sometimes need help. And I think vulnerability, humility, and recognition when you're in trouble or having difficulty is something that's important to share when appropriate in front of your children. You, for example, men don't cry, but they cry and they get angry. You know, so, you know, I think those kinds of conversations to talk about operationally what's going on with you is very, very important as a parent.
And at what age should they really start this conversation?
Gosh, you know, I don't think it's too early to start when the kid can really comprehend, you know what I mean? To show emotion, to reveal emotion, and then to talk about that experience. So if you're talking to a kid who's 3 or 4 years old and they're crying.
Shut up! There's most parents like
this. Yeah, that's what some of our parents have done. You need to be quiet, boy.
I know. I'll give you something to cry for. Oh, damn.
Exactly. Instead of saying, what's going on with you, sweetheart? Yeah. What's going on with you, son? Tell me what is bothering you. And then further, taking it a further step, maybe even sharing a story or an experience that you may have had that you think that they can understand. I think those are some of the developmental steps to introduce people to mental health. So like, as I said before, it's not this real complicated kind of thing because we experience it's a part of our daily experience, right?
But the thing, let's get to sports, especially football, right? The athletes are looked at as not even people. They're looked at as gladiators in a sense of your job is to go out there to win. You're not a person. So, I mean, we haven't gotten to the NFL yet. I'm looking at youth and high school athletics, where it's like you're as tough as the burden and the abuse you can take. Because let's be honest, a lot of our coaches, their coaching style is verbally abusive or very abrasive in the sense of we have to make you a man. So it's almost like dismantling you is what makes you a man. How can parents like counteract that? And how can young men counteract that?
Well, first of all, if I have a coach, if my son is being coached by a man who tells my son to get up when he's in pain, literally in pain, and say that you're not being a man, then I'm gonna talk to that coach and I'm gonna ask him to define what a man is, you know, in a respectful way. And if indeed my son, if he was old enough to say, hey, Dad, don't say anything, don't say anything, don't say anything to him, then I'm going to talk to him about the potential problems associated with that whole messaging, you know, because the reality is that it does hurt. But that might also be the reality that the kid needs to experience, but you have to explain it in terms that the kid can understand. So this sort of blanket, you know, get up in order, and the relationship between pain and being a man is not necessarily a direct causal relationship that is being played out on the field. So, you know, I think it's important sometimes, you know, as parents, you can't always talk to a coach, but you certainly can take the time out to explain what that means or what the messaging is and the potential pitfalls of that message.
And then your kid loses his starting spot. And then the kid is looking at you like, why can't you just be quiet?
That's exactly why you have to weigh the decision about who you know, the coach, the kind of conversations that you have.
And that's what you deal with in sports, because your kid is a commodity and many times they're disposable. So my other question is, having had a child go through youth football, high school football, college football, and now in the pros, and connected so many other families who have had that same experience, how can you really value yourself when you are at any moment, you're not valuable to the team anymore?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting question, because one of the things that I say to my rookies when they start at the beginning of the year is, paradoxical as it may seem, and I don't use these words, I say that, you know, at any day you can be done. You need to understand that, and that every day is a blessing, every day is a gift. And at the same time, along with this experience, and while this may be counter to what even coaches tell them, and I sort of, you know, carefully make that comment, is that it's important to develop parts of yourself and use this platform, use this team, use all of the resources that are available to you to develop other parts of you. Now, I know that this is at a time where all they've thought about is that they've now reached the altar, right? But in order to get the host, you need to get the whole host, the crust, and talk to the pastor who's giving it to you, So the point that I make is this, is that it's extremely important for them to begin to develop, as soon as they can, other elements of themselves. So, like, for example, guys, if they show a proclivity or interest in music, let's look at that in addition to what you're doing. So not right at the time where they're learning, you know, the playbook, but also during the course of the season, you know, and that's one of the things that I do along with my player engagement director, for example, is expose them to opportunities as part of their rookie experience.
So for parents, then, it's very important, and even for athletes themselves, you know, women or men, it's very important to really start to develop that early. So that way your athletic career or your athletic talent is not your sole focus.
Without a doubt.
So that way you always maintain a certain level of value for yourself, right? So even if my time is up here, I still have this going on. But that is sometimes easier said than done, because especially at college level, everything's asked of you. You have to, everything about you, from even what you can major in, is rooted in the team first.
So that's why it's so important as parents, if you have kids who reveal promise, to begin those discussions that we talked about a few minutes earlier, where they have a sense of self. So that starts with mental health, as I talked about safety. But developing that sense of self and identity is very, very important. Always having that as an option. And one of the things that I taught my son, and I certainly talked to players about, is not losing yourself, because this game, as you talked about, is disposable. And you can be injured. and it could be something, not that the team gets rid of you right away, but, you know, this is one of the reasons why players have such difficulty when they're injured, because they're worried about losing themselves. That's the greatest fear.
I remember when Eli was with the Saints and when he went down in that Tennessee game. And I think, you know, I think the hardest part was for me finding out that even after, once you get injured, even the injured player is many times no longer even included in certain meetings.
Absolutely.
Right? So, there's no way for you to stay connected, stay engaged, because all of a sudden it's like, listen, we need somebody who can be out there right now. So it's like everything about who you are is dependent on your ability to perform.
Right. And so one of the things that I do with all of the players that I know and have relationships with that are injured is I do everything I can to remind them and to ensure that they are involved in meetings, go to meetings, be a part of the team, be a part of the organization. In fact, people in the organization many times will respect the fact that the guy is still coming there to learn. So, you know, players can opt out and they can go to their training facility and do whatever they want to. But the integration of that experience is very, very important because that team becomes a part of who they are as well. So that's also a way to continue your relationship with teammates.
And I think it goes to team culture because we recently had Greg Camarillo on the show, and he shared how, though he was undrafted, like practice squad guy, he played with Marty Schottenheimer with the Chargers when they were in San Diego. He was saying how the culture there was so different. He was like, though I never even played, you know, got on the field, it was my best experience versus when I was in Miami where I was playing. It was different experience. So that's the thing. Each place is so different. You know, each team is its own country in a way.
Absolutely.
Let's get to parents right now at this stage are starting to prepare young people for the draft. Life's about to change. What are some advice that you have for parents whose sons are about to engage, whether, you know, in a draft, NFL draft, NBA, like your whole life is about to change? What's one major advice you can give them?
I know this is going to sound simplistic, but the bottom line is be a parent. Don't forget that you are their parent, because what will happen is that the dynamics will shift, almost invariably shift, where because money becomes a, you know, becomes that intermediary. I think it's extremely important to do the things that you did before, but to also recognize that your kid is individuating. In other words, separating. I'm a man right now, but you still are the parent. And so when parents give way to that, much too early, by the way, because they're generally 18, 19, if they're in the NBA, you know, 21, if they're in the NFL, if they allow that to happen, because the kids are going to still need it, and they may even want it, they may even crave it, even though they may act like they don't, they need it. They need to know that mom is mom and dad is dad.
First and foremost.
First and foremost. Yeah. And where it gets tricky is that parents will allow themselves to let this kid become the symbolic parent because of finances. And that is very problematic, I'm telling you.
Parenting is about position. You know, like, you know, once your kid I'm like, you may be taller than me, but it's not about the size. It's about the position. And the parenting is about the position, which, you know, shouldn't fluctuate and shouldn't change. And what about the young men, though? Because what advice can we have for the athlete? Because you're one thing I will tell you, whatever you thought you knew in college, when you get to the pros, it's never what you think. How can young men really prepare themselves to maximize the opportunity that they have in the league while also maintaining some sanity? Because it's rookie year, especially, it's insanity.
Well, you know, this gets back to the relationship between the young man and his parents. And, you know, depending on what that relationship is like as they enter the league, it's important to use that as a base, because that's, you know, I used the word safety before. The league is, you aren't going to feel safe. You're not going to know what's going to happen. There's going to be so much unpredictability. So where can that young man find predictability? Maybe it's you as the mom. Maybe it's dad. Maybe it's a brother. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that can be problematic also. But finding that safety, finding that foundation, and not removing yourself from that foundation is very, very important. You need all the support you can get. If you can't get it at home, for example, and there's parents that want money and all these other kinds of things, then you need to find someone on the team, or either you need to get together with your player engagement director or perhaps someone like myself to really talk about what this experience is like if you're feeling very imbalanced. So I know that takes time, but I think if I could give any advice to any guy getting ready to leave to play, don't lose sight of the foundation, of the people that are part of your foundation.
And also, how important should the athlete himself or herself take their mental health? What are some proactive things that they can do? Because many times that's not ingrained in the program, especially at the college level. It's not ingrained in the program. You're just going, going, going. You're exercising, you're training your body, but your mind and your emotions and the expectations, managing all those expectations, your family, your professors, your coaches. What are some things that they can do to kind of stay ahead and stay on top of their mental health?
So the first thing is self-awareness, as you know. But the question that I would ask, and the question that I think they have to ask themselves, am I me? You know, do I feel like myself? Is there something that is going awry? Do I feel like I don't have the same kind of control, realizing that they're in a system that there is controlling them? But what controls do I have? What are some of the things that I can do that make me feel good, that I can control, right? So if it's playing checkers or if it's hanging out with a friend, whatever the case may be, I think it's important to recognize that and to get as much as you can out of that. But if you feel that that still doesn't work, I really encourage guys to talk to other friends or teammates who may be struggling and ask them, what are they doing? And I mean, you know, in college, I mean, mental health is really not as much of a challenge. I think the kids are more likely, I'm actually out of college right now, are more likely to seek help or to seek help from a coach or to seek help from the trainer. I think it's becoming more normalized. I think the pros is definitely more to risk. But I find that players in general are more likely to access mental health because it's become such a predominant issue in society now.
What about when it comes to African-American young men? Because I know a lot of it, they feel like to be strong means that I can't show any weakness. And sometimes vulnerability, having a hard time, it shows weakness. So more guys, like sometimes you try to get a guy, hey, maybe you should see a therapist, like not wait till something goes wrong. But how do we, you know, normalize as families? How do we normalize for players that, you know what, even if you feel fine, like you don't work out because, you know, something's wrong with you. You work out to maintain your body, to maintain your endurance. So why not take that same approach with your mental health? How do we get them there?
Annie, it goes back to what we said earlier. And you know, it's really about a developmental task and the messages that they receive from parents or other people that are key in their lives. So to all of a sudden then, you know, not have that conversation, not have that model, not have an experience where they felt safe, then go to a pro team, it's going to be very, very difficult. So someone in my role, I mean, I develop relationships with players. It's really about relationships. It's really mental health is much broader than sitting in a room with a therapist talking about what is wrong with you. It's really about every day. It's about how you live your life qualitatively. So I think really having those conversations, if we're talking about it being a parent, is talking to them about that and also helping them to understand that therapy, sometimes we don't even use the word therapy. You know, go talk to somebody. It could be the minister, the player development. I mean, all of the resources that are available, but find that place where you feel safe.
That's the key word, though, safety, because sometimes you may not feel safe going to someone at your job. Do you know what I mean? Because you feel like it will be counterproductive as far as your ability to move up. Right.
No question.
So, but it's about safety. And it's a shame that most young men don't feel like your team or a different place is where you feel emotionally safe, because it's a business. Can you produce? It's all we care about.
So it might, like I said, it might be the team chaplain.
Yeah.
Or it might be calling back to the church and calling back to mom to have those conversations. The point is that we have to demystify this whole idea of therapy and being sick and out of control, to your earlier point. It's about, and I always talk about physical health and mental health almost as an analog, you know, and so as you talked about earlier. So we have to do something to normalize it. And I think that parents can be very instrumental in that. And I think talking to vets, sometimes it can be very helpful.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, talking to the legends can be very helpful. And in fact, even my own position, like, I mean, you know, at the team that I work with, you know, I'm like, hey, man, I'm not a one-stop shop. We got a lot of people that are going to help. This is a family operation, and that we all are involved in helping you to grow as a man. And one thing that I will say to you, a lot of times players are right. You know, use your instinct, but also trust yourself to know that when you're out of sorts, that you may need to get help. And you got to find out, if you don't even know who that person is, find out someone that you think can help you to get that answer. But do not allow yourself to continue in a pattern or down the path of difficulty, because it will invariably get more difficult as the season progresses.
Now, you've worked with a lot of players, you know, over the last two decades or so. Let me ask you this. What have you seen as been the greatest force against their mental health. Like, we live in a social media era now, which we didn't have 30 years ago, even 20 years ago. So, you know, back in the day, you could have a bad game, go home and still go on with your life. But now with social media, it's just like, it's everything. It's mind consuming. What have you seen has been some of the challenges to today's players' mental health and just overall emotional well-being?
Well, it's interesting you should start there. Clearly, that's been an issue for many of the players that I deal with right now. I mean, they live their lives around likes and what other people say to themselves, which gets directly back to identity, okay, and some of the things that we talked about in terms of parenting. So social media is definitely a challenge. But I think that there's three challenges that players face that over the, you know, the years that I've seen consistently across the board that follow the life of the player from the beginning to the end, and if they don't address it, then it becomes a problem when they leave. And that is relationships, you know, romantic relationships. But more importantly, and I think more pervasively, are their relationships with parents and family members. You know, not parents, but family members and friends. So not learning how to say no, not learning to set boundaries, finding their identity and their sense of self through other individuals now being now played out on through social media. But I mean, I think many guys that I have dealt with, they come in with, you know, I'm having a problem with my old lady. I'm having a problem with my parents. I'm having a problem with my extended family members. I'm having problems with my family, you know, my boys, this kind of thing. I think the guys kind of almost accept on some level the league or playing to be what it is. It's sort of like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I know I got to deal with this stuff. And I know I can't change coaches. I can't necessarily change the culture, which is actually an adaptive response in some ways, right? When they're dealing with coaches, the system, not playing and all this other stuff. But what they can't do, or they have difficulty, is making the shift, understanding that they have to do the same kinds of adjustments with their own family or get skills or get support and being able to do that.
That is so profound to hear, that it's almost like they're prepped themselves to deal with the business of the game. But the hardest part is off the field. On the field, you know, on the field meaning the job, they're fine. You know, they can manage that, but it's off the field. So how can they prepare to be able to better handle those romantic relationships, those family relationships, those friendship dynamics? Because sometimes you have to let some people go.
Well, you're saying it. I mean,
I'm the queen of let go. I'm the queen of letting people that'll bring you down go.
You have to definitely reach a point and be clear about, and this is a question that I ask Annie often, how do you want to live? How do you want to live? That applies to your romantic relationships. That applies to your relationships with your family of origin. That applies to your friends and family, so-called friends and family, right? Can you continue at this same rate, speed, without it affecting the quality of life? Can you continue to do the same thing and be as effective at the pro level, where every game, and maybe I would even argue that many practices make a difference. So when you put yourself on the line, you have to ask yourself this question: can I continue to do this? So first of all, you have to have some sense of self. Secondly, you have to have some sense and awareness of who you are. These are all, so these are sort of like our conversation is really, if you think about it, it's about building blocks that start with the parent modeling, as well as learning as men to accept vulnerability and being humble enough to seek help, to now you're in the fire. So once you're in the fire, can I continue to get burned and still be a pro or function to my maximum performance? If the answer is no, that means that's where you have to address the issue. Now, it becomes particularly challenging for many of our players, particularly African-American players, that are so wedded to their family or you know, all of this kind of stuff and feel extremely guilty because they can't do X, Y, and Z. This is where it becomes the question. What is getting in the way right now for you? And having them operationalize that and having that conversation. But I think for the parents that are listening to this, you have to understand that your kid, and he is a kid, is really going through a dramatic change that there is no playbook for. So the support, the real support, and maybe even being selfless as a parent is very difficult. It's difficult when you have a son who's very successful and not to feel like, man, all of the struggles that I've done, and I have a son who's very successful, for example, to feel like, hey, man, all I need you to do is do X. But that might not be the right time to have that conversation with the kid because they're grappling with way too many demands that they're not even prepared to handle. We also have to keep in mind as parents that our kids are only 23, 24, 25, and they haven't even developed their brain at that point. And in addition to the fact that many of our players, because of their lack of experiences, because they've spent so much time playing and developing this part of themselves, haven't developed the emotional stability and security to make decisions without having familial support or mother or father support. And so they're struggling a lot.
You know, I always say my first job, I was 14 years old working at Easy Pickings. For my son, his first job is in NFL. So it's such different dynamic. But you said something early, and I want to come back to that. You talked about it's important for the player to come back to himself and realize who I am. Let's talk about identity, because when you have spent your entire life from the time you're, let's just say, 6 years old, till now you're 21 in the league starting, sports being the biggest part of your identity. How do players, because some of them you talk about coming back to yourself, they don't know who they are yet. Like you said, you've spent so much time developing your athletic brain, your athletic life, but your humanity, who you are as a man, who you are as a person, many times they're not in development together. So we know the identities of many things is the lenses from which you see life, because you first have to see yourself. Your identity allows you to cultivate that. But how do we even help them develop who they are?
It's a great question. And what I would say is that who are you outside of football? And who do you want to be outside of football? And who is it in your life that you would like to model yourself from too? You know, who are those individuals? What are the behaviors? What do they do? Remember, I mentioned earlier, there are veterans. I was thinking about a guy that really stood out to me as an incredible young man. His name is Curtis Martin. I don't know Curtis well, but I've met Curtis. But I was thinking, like, man, if I was a player, that's the dude. That's the guy. And there's probably someone on their team. But it's very easy to access players around the National Football League. If you say, hey, look, I'm in my first year. Larry Fitzgerald's another guy. Larry, can I get Larry's number? Can I talk to him? What did you do? He came to the league early. I think he was 19 when he came to the league, you know, or 20. What did you do? What was the things that you did to help you to develop, not your craft, but you and your adjustment to the league? What kinds of things did you think about so that you could prepare yourself after football? And both of these guys have done very well, not only economically, but they also learned the game inside of the game as well. But part of that was their own maturation and seeking individuals who were very, very instrumental in their development. That I know.
So the key becomes, because I know a lot of guys are not comfortable with this, where asking for help in a sense of, hey, man, let me pick your brain, you know, because normally I'm around a lot of athletes. My son's been around, you know, playing this game for a long time at a high level from Ohio State, where when he was drafted in 2016, there were probably more than a dozen players that went into the league at the same time. So you're around these guys. And a lot of times I think we need to normalize for men that it's okay to seek advice. It's okay to seek mentorship. It's okay to, you know, extend yourself. Because sometimes like that bravado thing. So it takes a certain level of not just humility, but self-awareness to be able to seek that kind of resource.
If you were to interview any successful man, you know, I'm talking about, you know, the people that we all recognize as successful in society, I would venture to say that they have had at least one or two mentors in their lives that, you know, and so find that person. Find that woman, you know, find that individual that you think or you imagine can help you along the way. And if you can find that person, you know, it might be the agent, you know, it might be the minister that we keep referring to. or it could be a veteran, or it could be someone that works at the National Football League. You know, there are a lot of people that are providing incredible research, that have incredible knowledge. And there are people that are in business that would love to mentor you. They would love, you know, one of the things we do, we take our guys to, you know, people that are own multi-million dollar businesses. What did you do? How'd you get this? How did this happen? Who helped you along the way?
Well, you know, I want to get back to, you said earlier, what you see as the challenges for mental and emotional health of players. So let's try to see if we can give some advice from that. What does a healthy relationship look like as far as romantic? Let's tackle that.
That's an age-old question, an age-old problem. But the bottom line is trust. And I think for young men who entered the game, that is a question that they have to ask themselves and challenge themselves.
But it's so many women on Instagram, on Gram, on Facebook, everywhere. Yeah,
no question. So you have to ask yourself, what kind of relationship do you want? Do you want a transactional relationship? You know, just keeping it real. And if you want to transact, you're going to get transactional results.
Results. Exactly.
And drama. So
and drama.
If you want a relationship that's real, that has some substance, then you're going to have to take time to develop and nurture that relationship, which means that you may not get your immediate gratification taken care of, especially if you're living in a world where a whole lot of people are offering that to you. So, you know, and then you have to be honest with yourself. We talked about self-awareness. You may not be ready for that, but let's be honest with yourself.
Come on now.
Let's just keep it real with yourself. So, you know, I talk to myself. I know you talk to yourself, Annie. And you have to decide, where am I along the trajectory of the path of personal success? And you have to ask yourself that question. I tell my son, who's 25, you know, and I tell this to players. Look, man, not every relationship is going to be a romantic relationship. Not everybody is going to be someone that you're going to marry. Well, you know, and you have to be real with yourself, to realize that once you're in that relationship, that somebody may have different expectations too. So that becomes the second stage of that kind of relationship. And if that is an imbalance, if that's not in alignment, there comes your drama. And then you also have to realize that you're in a vulnerable position as a man to impregnate this woman. And then you're going to have double drama. And then you're not going to be able to perform.
Lifelong drama.
Lifelong, at least 18 years, and absolutely lifelong, because you're going to deal with it for as long as you can.
I know for me, I tell Eli all the time, I was like, listen, you're not ready. The worst thing you do is waste a woman's time. If you're not ready, you're not ready. And that's fine. But don't play with anybody's heart, because I think that's where sometimes you're not ready. Be very forthright. And it is what it is.
And then sometimes you know, I would argue too, on the other side of it, they say, well, I don't know. And how would I know until I examine this? But before you examine any kind of relationship or any of the relationship you're involved in, you need to take time to think about, who you are in relationship to this relationship. What is it that you want? What do they want? Are you discussing what that means for you? And what does that mean that you have to give up in order to get that?
I'm no prude, but I think many times with our culture, with our music or whatever, the expectations from some young men in this culture, especially in your 20s, for women is so devalued, right? So it's almost like, you know, what you want is what you get, you know, because if that's what you're looking for, then there's so much that comes with it that you're not ready for. So I think it's all about valuing a woman's heart. I always say, if you want big butts and thighs, go to the freezer section and get you some chicken parts. But if you want a real woman, look at her heart. You have to value a woman. And if you are not there yet, then leave them alone, right? Because sometimes we live in a different world now, because just an accusation, innuendo, can really end your career.
No question. No question about that. And I would just say, I realize at the same time, and I sympathize with young men today because the media, because of the way that we look at women in our society today, and because that starts at such an early age for young men, that it's hard for them to recognize and value a relationship. But I caution every young man that decides to have a sexual relationship with a woman that they really are at risk. They are really at risk. They are not only at risk in terms of impregnating a woman, but they're at risk in terms of destroying a relationship and also the kinds of relationships that women want to have with men. people need to understand, and men need to understand, that their behavior has an impact and maybe even an imprint on a woman's life.
That's the word. Yeah.
Then you get into morality, ethics, and all those other kinds of things. But it's important to realize that they have mamas, and think about your mother, you know, and I, you know, I know that sounds very concrete, but the reality is that many of our players' mothers have had to grapple with these same issues.
Exactly. Exactly. We touched on romantic relationship. What does a healthy friendship look like? Because many times, you know, you come in, your boys, I think sometimes people don't understand. It's not like you outgrow certain people. It's just that your life paths are going different ways. But sometimes you try to make a friendship work that should no longer be working. What's the key to identifying a healthy friendship?
The bottom line is it reciprocal? And reciprocal means is, am I getting what I need from the relationship? And am I giving what is fair and reasonable in terms of what I can do without there being some dance around that? I think a lot of times, you know, I've had a lot of players, their friends say, well, you changed. Well, yeah, you have. Your values haven't changed, but your life has changed. Where you live has changed. And along with that is recognizing that change. So, you know, I used to think like, nah, man, I ain't changed. And fundamentally, you may not have changed, but, you know, money does change your life. It changes your relationships. And so you need to be aware of what that means. But at the same time, you need to understand that there are, that if you want that relationship, you have to talk about what that experience is like with a person, be willing to go there to some degree. And that's difficult. I've had difficulty with that myself. I think you got to be honest with yourself. And you have to really, really, and I hate to use this term, but you almost have to test relationships sometimes. You know what I mean? To determine whether or not that relationship is predicated on just hanging out with me because I'm at with the league or because, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. You do have to. It's so funny. I hate to get biblical right now, but I feel like being a, you know, when I was in college, I went to a Catholic university and we had to take 2 years of religion, 2 years of philosophy. So philosophy and religion all goes together to me. And I remember reading about the story about Joseph, who was sold into slavery by his brothers, and he had a traumatic life. And in the end, when he finally found them, there was a part where he says that he tested them, right? Because before they even knew who he was, he had to make sure that, because sometimes we feel bad, like, oh, no, you do have to test. The key word, if I take anything from today, is safety. And sometimes to feel safe, you know, relationships do need to be tested. So you can have that safety, that emotional safety or that physical safety that you need. So friendships, yeah, even if you don't deliberately or go out and test it, situations present tests all the time.
Absolutely. And I would just add to that is that, you know, we've raised our kids to understand the world in a lot of ways and a lot of times, you know, if it's not feeling right, then you have to ask yourself, what is this relationship about? And that relationships, and due to the course of you being a professional, the dynamics are going to change, you know, and so you have to calibrate your expectations as well. And you also have to realize that in that change in that relationship, that you can't do some of the same things, you know, and so that may result in a change that you didn't anticipate or want. But it is also part of your responsibility and the accountability that you need to have for yourself and your family, because creating safety is about creating safety for you and your future children. If somebody's not down with that, then you need to really reevaluate that relationship.
I have to touch on this because it's just timely. Right now, we're dealing with the police shooting of Dante Wright, and it had me thinking, you know, many times as a Black community, especially of Black men, we've gotten so used to trauma, right? It becomes part of our nature that we don't even address it. But I want to address it today. How can parents help their young Black men and young Black women, but mainly young Black men, deal with these police shootings? And just, listen, every night I would text my son, hey, you good? You know, because you worry about your kid. You know, my son drives a luxury vehicle. So as a parent, I don't know one Black mother with a son out there who's not like, hey, text me when you get home. I don't care how old you are, because I just need to know you're safe. How are our boys, how are our young men dealing with this stuff? Because they won't talk about it many times, but it has to be traumatic.
So, like you, I have a 25-year-old son, and not only does my wife call him every night when he goes out at night, I do the same. And I am not going to lie to you. I am afraid. Like, he has a friend. We live in San Diego, and so San Diego is not, you know, it's pretty multicultural. And I get concerned when he rides with his boy, who's a brother. And I'm like, hey, man, you all need to be careful where you go. You know, it's like, and so this was a conversation 2 days ago. I was like, hey, man, I know you want to go here and I know you want to go there. Maybe you go by yourself. And it's like I'm overthinking. I'm calling my friends that are judges and asking them, well, do we do this or do we do that? I don't have an answer to that by saying what should we do other than we should talk about it. And we need to express our fears and concerns, because I think many of our young men are, I think some of them are oblivious to it. And I think some of them are very, on the other end of the spectrum, they're very aware and they're very angry. But I think it's important to have the dialogue and not allow us to push it away. You know what I mean? Because I think that's where it becomes problematic. And then all of a sudden they react. So I think the conversations need to be fresh. They need to be real. It is part of reality in Black America today. And I don't think we need to run away from it. I don't know if we can protect our kids in any other way than other than providing, as I use the word safety many times during this conversation, but letting them know that we love them and letting them know to be aware and letting them know to please be careful.
How can we help them process the pain of it all, though?
Talking about it. Talking about our experiences. If you grew up, for example, my parents, I grew up during the civil rights movement. You know, I was a young kid. I was, you know, maybe 10, 9 or 10. But talking about different experiences that we've had and what we did to prevail. Because we definitely have prevailed as a race of people. But talking about our experiences, talking about our fears, some of the messages you learned from your parents and reminding them of their responsibility. Again, and particularly for those that are at the pro level and even at the collegiate level, about our responsibility to not only ourselves, and it starts with self, but also our teammates and our communities. Because our kids, in many ways, are the pillars of our communities. So it does start with those, really having those very, very direct conversations and honest conversations, and also revelation of our own fears. I think that's extremely important to put it in the mix and to open those conversations up so that they don't just react in the world and in response to someone treating them unfairly and then reacting just in the moment. Yeah, so it's real. It's something that needs to be addressed and discussed.
Well, you know, I definitely appreciate your insight and your wisdom today. You've been around and you have enough experience and intimate experience to really be able to provide this insight. How would you, if you had to play mental health or NFL commissioner right now, what can the league do to make the NFL a more emotionally and mental health supportive league for the players?
Well, I have to say, you know, based on my experience, and I actually work with the league, you know, around some of these discussions, or we have discussions about this, I think that they're actually doing a great job. Mental health, I mean, it's everywhere. We get messages, I get emails 2 times a day. I think what we need to do, though, if there's anything that I think we could do more of, is having, for example, and they may be doing this at certain teams, I just haven't experienced it because COVID has sort of put a lid on some of these things. But I think having vets, having legends, having some of the players that we know that are synonymous with football to get on Zooms, to come to teams and come around to talk about, we can talk about George Floyd. We can talk about all of the experiences, because at any one point in time, players have dealt with some of these same kinds of issues. The one thing about history is that it repeats itself. You know, and so I think that the league can do more of that. I know that they're in the process of doing some of that. But I also have to say that they've been doing, under direction and leadership of at least the program I work with, they have been laying out all kinds of information. But it's got to be every day. And I think that those efforts have been well received thus far.
Well, you know, I appreciate your time. And this has been such an insightful conversation.
It's my pleasure, Amy.
And just knowing that the league is growing in that direction, because 20 years ago, it probably wasn't the case, even maybe even 10 years ago. But the ability to adapt and the ability to help these young men to kind of transition from the field to off the field and live healthy, productive life is so important. So, so important.
Well, Annie, first of all, I really appreciate you inviting me. I appreciate what you do and who you are. And, you know, it takes a mom like you and other mothers that I'm sure you're friends of to have these kind of conversations with their sons. There's no book for it, as you know. But coming from your heart and from your soul with integrity and authenticity is probably the best thing you can do for your sons. I don't care if they're in the pros or if they're in the eighth grade. So I appreciate the opportunity to join you today.
You know, and I truly appreciate Dr. Herb Martin. I appreciate not just his training, but his background as a Black man from Detroit, being a clinical psychologist and really being able to connect not just textbook with the players, but being able to connect with where they came from is extremely important, because as he talked about safety, when it comes to mental health, it's all about safety, connectability. And today's conversation was so important for me personally, because I believe that mental health training should be part of the athletic training experience. I love when Dr. Herb talked about the most important thing, whether it's mental health, whether it's relationship, is safety. That means the ability to feel safe, to be able to share, to be able to be vulnerable, to be able to hear and receive help. That is so important. I was personally taken when he said that the number one issue with players is not even the business of the game and all the trauma and stress that comes with it, but the hardest part for players is relationships. Because, you know, transitioning from who you were to who you are now, the money that comes with it, and maintaining family relationships and friendships. And when you think about that, that's what makes mental health, therapy, talking and connecting so important, because like he said, there is no book written for that. And each experience, while they may have some kind of connection and similarities, each experience is unique to the one experiencing it. So mental health becomes such a crucial part of growing as a pro, because so many relationships are managed, a relationship with your coaches, relationship with your family, your parents, your extended family, your friends, and your significant other. I also loved when he talked about how to address the trauma of police shooting for Black men. And when he talked about the ability to give them a space to be able to share. Which brings me to today's Annie's Clapback. We all sat nearly a year ago when we watched a police officer put his knee on the neck of George Floyd for more than 9 minutes as he passed away. I personally could never watch the video. I, like most people, read about it, followed it, but I couldn't watch the video. And recently, with the verdict coming out guilty for the police officer, everybody's screaming justice, justice. This is not justice to me. This is accountability. Justice is not a one-on-one basis. Justice is systemic. And until we have reform all around, unfortunately, we're going to see more and more of these police shootings, as we did immediately after the verdict. There was another police shooting. I don't know what else Black people can do to save their own lives, because trying to appeal to the morality of white supremacy is like asking the devil to be nice. It's simply not in his nature. Once again, thanks for listening to Raising a Pro. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Boom Originals Network. I'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify or share the show with someone you think would love it. This show has been very important to me, and I hope that you guys have gained as much wisdom and understanding as I gain every day from each guest. See you next time, family.